Remember when you couldn't order a ride at the press of a button? Or get online without hearing this? Or get Domino's delivered to over 150,000 unexpected outdoor locations.
Wait, what?
Introducing Domino's Hotspots. You can finally get pizza delivered right to the beach, the quad, or the dog park. Not at home? Not a problem. Find a Domino's Hotspot near you and get two medium two-topping pizzas delivered for $5.99 each. Two-item minimum handmade pan pizzas will be extra. Ask for this limited time offer. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary. Restrictions apply. Visit Domino's.com for details on Domino's Hotspots.
Okay, we are back. The Duly Noted Podcast makes its triumphant return, I guess you would say. A lot of different things. We got advertising this year. I'm excited about that, obviously. We got a great interview coming up with the former head ball coach, although I guess he still is a head ball coach. He's just a head ball coach somewhere else. And we're going to try to make this podcast even better than it was before. Right. Okay. Well, no, seriously, we are. We're going to try to really upgrade it and make it better, and got a lot to talk about. It is a Monday when I'm taping this. It's actually, this will be up Tuesday. I'll get to the reasons why I'm doing it Monday instead of Tuesday in a little bit, but every week we'll have it up. And then when we get to football season, we'll be doing it twice a week. And I know you guys have been asking me, when's it coming back? When's it coming back? When's it coming back? Well, it's back. And we'll start out talking about the Gators. Obviously, we've had several opportunities. I will say this. It is like night and day, the difference between the access that we have to coaches, to players, to everything. Just how much better things are being done over there under Dan Mullen. And none of this affects you, and yet it does affect you. And the reason I say that is you guys only care if your team's going to win football games. You don't care whether we have access. But the more access we have, the more opportunities we have, the more stories that you're going to get and the more stuff you're going to read that you find interesting. I mean, I think where one place where Jim McElwain really lost Gator fans was in the press conferences. I think that and after games. I was watching a game the other day, the Tennessee game it was. And I was watching the post game and I was like, God, that was terrible. Terrible. You know, saying nothing and just, you know, he threw the ball far. That's all I know. You know, it didn't make fans really want to go up and hug him. It's funny. I remember being in the press box in Jacksonville, something that Martin Fennelly said, who's a columnist of the Tampa Bay Times, great writer, almost had him here. I may have had a choice to make between Martin Fennelly and Mike Bianchi. We were very fortunate we had two guys like that who wanted the job here when Jack Harsin left. And I hired Bianchi. I thought Bianchi would fit better here. And I still stand behind that. And certainly Mike is a great columnist and does a great job. Martin is a really great columnist, and we would have been well off with him. But anyway, I digress, as I tend to do on this podcast. But something he said in that press box that kind of stayed with me, and he was asking it as a question to me. He said, he doesn't have anybody there who will go to bat for him, does he? Talking about Jim McElwain. And I'm like, no. I said, that's part of the problem. He has circled the wagon so much that there's nobody out there to say, hey, now wait, let's pause. Let's press pause, as Urban Meyer likes to say. And as a result, you've got this in great situation with Dan Mullen now where you feel like everybody around the place is energized. Everybody around the place is happy. Everybody around the place is thrilled that this situation is going on, including us. I mean, look, media is going to complain. I made a joke about Mike Bianchi complaining because I ran out of scallops at the dinner we were at up in Atlanta. But he did. So anyway, things have been really going well over there, and I feel like they're making progress. Although today, this is Monday, Dan wasn't real happy with his quarterbacks, too much fake checkdowns and all this stuff. And, you know, it's going to be a process. And that's why I've told people look, this thing isn't going to get turned around. It's not going to get resolved. It's not going to get fixed overnight. I wrote about this last week, that this is a damaged program, and it is. It is a program that has been inflicted with a lot of bad stuff. 2-4-1 seasons in 5 years is certainly a factor. The fact that you have all the embarrassing issues that have not gone away, they continue to this day, as we all know, with other guys making stupid decisions, those kind of things. The fact that they've been so bad on offense, and it's a damaged program, and they're going to have to, first thing they're going to have to do is repair that damage before they can really recruit. Now, I know there's a lot of people who don't see that as a good excuse, and I'm not saying it is an excuse. I'm saying it's reality that Florida has struggled a little bit in the recruiting trail. I think it's going to pick up, and I think it already has picked up a little bit, but don't worry about recruiting until it's over. I've always said that. But you've got to show something on the field. You've got to go out there and score 45 against Charleston Southern and 52 against Colorado State, and your offense do something against either Kentucky or Tennessee. But look, you don't have to score 1,000 points, but you've got to go out and show that this offense is fun to play in before offensive guys are going to want to come. You can't just keep promising them it. Jim McElwain promised it. Will Muschamp promised it. We're going to get this thing going the right direction. We're going to clean it up, and then we're going to – it didn't. There were years, certainly, where they were a pretty good football team, but never good on offense. The piece I did last week that Steve Spurrier did love on how they've been so bad and why they've been so bad, and I stay with it, is coaching. Coaching has been inferior. On the offensive side of the football, Florida has been inferior coaching. You can blame the players all you want, and I'm not saying they're not above blame. They are. Will Greer's knucklehead decision cost Florida, probably set Florida back 2 or 3 years. You know, if he's still around, he probably wouldn't be around. He probably would be have gone on as a third-year junior or fourth-year junior and finished up that year and be headed to the NFL. But Florida's offense would not have been what it was the last 3 years. I think we all know that. Injuries were a factor as well. Some of the guys that they didn't get and did get, you know, the fact that they didn't really interest in Deshaun Watson came back to bite them. The fact that they would have probably brought Lamar Jackson in here if Muschamp hadn't been fired. You know, so there's some personnel decisions. But the bottom line was, and it's funny because I was talking to Steve about this off the mic. You'll hear the interview coming up in a little bit. And I was saying, you know, I just think it comes down to coaching. He goes, look, you can't tell me Florida hadn't had any receivers around here or any quarterbacks. I know better. And I said, yeah, coach, you're right. I don't think they've been great players, and I do think some of them have lacked that gene that I talk about a lot, the clutch gene. But they've had good enough players to not be so miserable on offense. It's just like last year on defense. Last year on defense, they were 12th. In the SEC in sacks, that was coaching. They had players good enough. I mean, they had a first-round pick playing defensive tackle. They had some other really good players. C.C. Jefferson's a really good player. They had enough good players not to be 12th in the SEC. But when you don't blitz, that's what you get. And you get 4-7. So, and again, that goes back to, I know I mentioned this in my column. ESPN did a thing of the top 50 players in college football, and there are no Florida players on there, and I'm not surprised. Who would you put on there? Because when you go 4-7, nobody looks at you and goes, well, despite them going 4-7, nah, everybody goes, well, you were part of 4-7. Doesn't really matter what happens in the beginning of the season or preseason and all that. And that's the big question right now. You know, Florida's got a different look and a different attitude and different coaches, and certainly they've got swag. I mentioned this up in Atlanta. They were the most upbeat I'd seen Florida players probably since I've been going to that thing. And again, when you've been 4-7, that's going to happen. You're going to have that kind of You could say whistling past the graveyard, certainly. But there's no question that they're fired up. They're ready to go. And I think they're going to be a pretty decent team. The question, of course, revolves around whether they can score points. And I'll tell you this. To me, I know that I told people the most important person on this in camp was Billy Gonzalez. Well, I think getting Jefferson and Grimes eligible, and what I'm hearing out of from different people who've been out there, you know, who've gone to practices. I haven't made one yet. I've had a lot going on. I'll get to that in a minute. But that I'm not worried about wide receiver. I think they're going to be fine at wide receiver. To me, the most important position is the offensive line. It's not quarterback. It's the offensive line. Because no matter how good you are at quarterback, no matter how good you are at running back, if you don't have a good offensive line, you can't be any good. And, no, all this offensive line's back. They're all back. You know, let's go. But are they better? Because they have to be better. If they're not better, then it doesn't matter that they're all back, right? So I'm a big believer that Florida's struggled at the offensive line as a whole. Not maybe not some individuals. Some guys got drafted very high on the offensive line. Some guys are still in the NFL who played in the offensive line the last 8 years. But there's not been one offensive line that I was – the closest would have been 0-12. They weren't too bad in 0-12 when they were really a running team. But, you know, they've got to get it going on that offensive line. And then everything else, okay, now the quarterback has time. You know, you go watch the way Jake Fromm played in those playoff games, which were unbelievable. They've shown the Oklahoma-Georgia game 1,000 times on TV. But that's okay. It's a great game. I've enjoyed watching it all 999 times. You watch that way he played. Now, he got sacked here and there, but there was a lot of plays where he just stood back there and found his guy. And that's what makes a great offense. Time to throw. Time to find your guy. Time to understand what the defense is doing and not feeling like, you know, somebody's about to slap you upside the head. So I really believe the offensive line is the key. And next week I may believe something else.
Looking for a great real estate agent? Call Betsy Pepin at Pepin Realty. Betsy is a leader in North Florida real estate. Betsy spends hundreds of thousands of dollars yearly to attract the maximum number of buyers, so you get the most money for your residential or commercial property. She also offers a guaranteed sale program, so if she cannot sell your property for a price you agree upon, she will buy it. Call Betsy today at 352-226-8474 or visit pepinrealestate.com.
I feel like I need to comment on Urban Meyer, and I know that it's easy to call him Urban Liar, which really goes back to his days at Florida. That nickname came out. I think Mike Freeman gave it to him after he lied about Chris Leak's availability in a game. Urban is like I think Urban believes he's made of Teflon, and I think that's one of his real faults, is that I'm going to do what I want to do, and you're going to know what I think you need to know, and I don't mind lying. Now, look, coaches lie all the time. They aren't as blatant usually as Urban Meyer's been in his career. They've said, you know, they've given you, well, you know, we don't know if he's going to be available, even if they do know. So they're lies come out of their mouths all the time. But this last one was a bad one, and the question I have is, or not the question, but the statement I'd make is, Ohio State did not fire Zach Smith because he's a bad guy. They fired Zach Smith because we found out he's a bad guy. And as this thing continues to go, I was almost not going to comment on it because who knows, by the time this thing is out, something else could come out. And but I don't think anything is going to be decided. My gut is that he keeps his job with a suspension of some kind, but who knows? And I think there's a lot of Gator fans who hope he gets fired and feel like it's karma. I don't hope he gets fired. However, I do think that his judgment was clouded by somebody he was close to his family, being Zach Smith, whose dad is Earl Bruce, or grandfather is Earl Bruce. All right, one last thing before we get to our interview with Steve Spurrier. I am an AP voter this year. Right now, and again, I don't know when the vote is due. I don't think it's due for another 10 days or so. But right now, here's my top four, my playoff four. I've got Clemson at number one. And you say, what? Everybody's going to vote Alabama number one. And that's not why I'm doing it. I never am a guy who says, well, I don't want to be like everybody else. I vote for who I believe. I think Clemson, the schedule they have, the personnel they have, the steadiness of quarterback they have, I think they're the best team in the country. And I think with Alabama, with a quarterback controversy and all the new coaches and all the turnover, I think, look, if I'm voting with my not my heart, but with my brains, I think Clemson's the best team in the country. I've got them one. I've got Alabama two. I've got Wisconsin three. Wisconsin is loaded. And I got a feeling this is Wisconsin's year, and I got Washington at number four. Now, I say that because I might have had Ohio State in that top four before. I can't put them there now because I don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how disruptive this whole thing is for a team that just started camp. We don't know if Urban's going to come back in 2 weeks and blow his whistle and go, hey, you know, I'm back, everything's fine, don't worry about it. I don't know what to do with them. In the poll. By the way, yeah, I am sticking Florida in there at the bottom, right around 23-24. And it's very it's not with a lot of enthusiasm. I did see the coaches poll had Florida 27, South Carolina 26. Now, I think South Carolina 26 is way underrated. I think South Carolina's got a good team, but I will say this. Somebody pointed this out to me. Look who they beat last year. Okay, they beat Michigan in a bowl game. Michigan was on another late season slide. No big deal. But other than that, I mean, their wins in the regular season weren't overly impressive. People are high on them because they got a lot of guys back. They got, obviously, Jake Bentley. Deebo Samuel's back again this year. They got a new offensive coordinator. I'm telling you, and this has been my belief all summer, the loser of the South Carolina-Georgia game, second game of the year, is going to be in for a little bit of hurt. And if it's South Carolina, I'm talking 7-5 hurt. If it's Georgia, I'm talking 9-3 hurt. Now, 9-3 for Georgia after playing for the national championship, being one play away, would be a letdown, would be a fallback. And I think some people expect that. I'm just saying that a loss in that game is going to be deflating for the loser, especially if it's South Carolina. If it's South Carolina, oh, they're gonna feel like, oh God, we're just trying to get back to the Outback Bowl or whatever. But anyway, all right, let me take a break. We'll do that, and it's gonna be a little different kind of break than it used to be. I'm looking forward to listening to this when I not look forward to listening to me, but just how this thing is newly formatted. But they made a conscious effort to go out and sell it. I've been pushing them for about 5 years to do it because I knew we could, and I know that it's got a great audience. So, hey, we'll take a break after this commercial message. Steve Spurrier, the head coach of the Orlando something-somethings. We don't know their nickname yet. Will join us on the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com.
At Vistar, we believe in better. Better convenience. So members can bank any way they want. Whether it's at a branch, on a mobile device, or at one of more than 20,000 fee-free ATMs across North America. We believe that people have better things to do with their time. If you believe that convenience is better, join Vistar. We never forget that it's your money. All loans subject to approval. Insured by NCUA.
All right, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast. We are here with the head coach again, and ambassador and consultant here in Florida. Of course, Steve Spurrier joining us right now. Steve, you must be getting excited. You getting antsy about this football league coming up?
Yeah, I tell you what, Pat. When Rick Neuheisel actually called me first back, oh gosh, I don't know if it was February, March of this year. And he said, would you be interested in a spring football league? It's called the American Football Alliance of American Football. And I said, well, I may be. And he said, well, J.K. McKay, who's vice president or president of the new league, give him a call, or he's going to call you. Mm-hmm. And so J.K. called me, and he started talking about it a little bit. And I said, he said, we'll have a team in Orlando, and that would be your team. I said, I can get Orlando and coach January, February, March, and April, 4 months a year. I said, count me in. I didn't even know what the pay was then. But, yeah, an opportunity to do what obviously I think I still have ability to do. I really do. And we all have God-given talents that we should keep using. So I felt like this was a wonderful opportunity. And I got a bunch of my former coaches here at Florida coming back, Bob Sanders, Jim Collins, Jimmy Ray Stevens, Rod Broadway, and a few other guys here and there. But it's going to be, I think, a real thrilling adventure. And obviously, we're going to try to put together a team that can win the Alliance. There will be a championship game in April. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
How much do you think the game has changed in terms of offense from when you were at Florida putting up all those numbers? And I mean, do you think the game has changed, gotten more sophisticated defensively, harder to score?
It has gotten a little more difficult as far as the defense disguising their coverages. Mm-hmm. I used to love to play against those teams that were like number one in the nation in defense. I still remember the Alabama game of 96, SEC championship game. They were number one in the nation in total defense, run defense, pass defense. And so we're watching the tape, and all they played was man-to-man, bump and run, man-to-man all over the place, and they just stifled people. You know, they just smothered them. So I said, Danny, Ike, Riddell, Quincy, that's what we're going to get. So we're going to have a bunch of good plays ready for you guys to go take advantage. And did they take advantage? Golly, Danny threw for 401 yards and six touchdown passes in that game. So it was easier back then. They do disguise more and more nowadays. But there's a good play for every defense, every coverage. And, of course, we used to audible all the time back in the 90s. You don't see teams audible much anymore. I don't know why. Sometimes the defense does change their coverage after you audible. So sometimes you have to do a dummy audible to try to get the right coverage. But it's probably a little bit more difficult. But I don't see teams really practice throwing the ball all through practice the way we did. So if you're going to be good in something, you got to practice it all the time.
What do you see here? I mean, now with Dan Mullen, is it
They're definitely much more organized, I think, than our last offensive staff. And the times I watch practice, they throw it around a bit. They don't throw it around as much as we did now because, everybody's different. Every coach coaches differently. But I was simply an offensive coordinator when I was here, and there's very few head coaches that are offensive coordinators all day. But I, like Danny said, Coach, you were with us all 2.5 hours or whatever we were out there. And I said, yeah, that's just the way I did it, and I thought that was the best way I could help the team. Now head coaches are in charge of everything, and, you know, the assistant guys pretty much hang with their guys all day. And that's true just about everywhere.
What did you think when they hired Dan Mullen? I know that there were a bunch of other names out there. And
I told Scott, I said, this is the best guy you can hire.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to hire Urban back or somebody that has a big, big reputation. But Dan done a super job at Mississippi State. In fact, I think he and I have something in common. I don't know if there's ever been a head coach at Mississippi State to leave for a better job. Usually Mississippi States and the South Carolinas and the Dukes or places where football doesn't have a strong tradition, that coach usually, if he does pretty well, he can stay and retire there, which a few have done. But there's, I don't think there's ever been a coach leave for a bigger job from Mississippi State. I know I was the first to leave at Duke.
Yeah.
but anyway, so that's quite a credit to Dan. And, of course, he brought most of his staff here. So they appear to know what they're doing very well.
Yeah, you and I talked last year about the receivers and the routes they were running and how guys were peeking at their where they were going to go. I talked to a couple of the receivers about it, and they go, yeah, we were peeking. Mm-hmm. And you can't get open if the DB knows where you're going to go.
Oh, exactly, Pat. And I really like Billy Gonzalez. I like all the little drills they do out there, stick-stepping, getting away from the guy and so forth. And And then on the other side, on those one-on-one pass drills I was watching yesterday, those DBs are sticking with them pretty good. Yeah. They know how to play tight man coverage. But the receivers were giving a little extra step to get away from the guy, which I didn't see a lot of that in the prior couple of years.
I know we talked about this, the story I did the other day about how bad the offense has been. But when you see it there in black and white, this is the school of Steve Spurrier and Tim Tebow. How did it get this bad? It's just unbelievable how bad it's been.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I agree with that article you wrote last week that it has to fall back on the coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, don't tell me we don't have receivers here. Don't tell me Felipe Franks can't throw the ball. He's a beautiful passer. He's got to be taught when and where to throw it and look this guy off and look in this direction and timing and all this, that, and the other. Just really wasn't there. But, you know, that's history, and we're looking forward to the ball getting in the air a lot better, and a lot more touchdown passes. When I saw what you had written, that we've only had what, 300 yard passing games in the last 7 or 8 years,
something like that.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. So we averaged what, 330 or something like that every year. I think we averaged around 300 every year all 12 years. So it is a huge difference.
What when you look at those days, what obviously the championships always resonate with you, but it had to be a pretty cool that whenever you put on that touchdown pass tape and showed it to a guy and said, here are our touchdown passes from last year. I mean, whose idea was that?
Touchdown pass tape? Well, when I, of course, went to South Carolina and so forth, would show that to the receivers to just sort of let them know, hey, here's the opportunity. Here's how these guys ran the routes. Here's how the quarterbacks executed and so forth. So it certainly we're proud of that. In 96, we won the national championship. A lot of people don't know that we led the nation in scoring that year, Pat.
Yep.
Did you know that?
In fact, they
handed out an honor, the NCAA did. I didn't even know they had that back then. But, as an offensive coordinator, I guess I'm pretty proud that we led the nation in scoring. And Bobby Stoops used to say, if I could hold them to 24, I was in good shape, I knew. But anyway, we had players that really loved to practice and were very good at catching and throwing and pass protection. And we ran the ball very well also.
Yeah.
Eric Rett's still the leading rusher in school history. So.
It was
a fun time. Yeah, it really was, Pat. And now that we're sort of in our stage, we're looking back. We're bringing back the 1993 team.
Right.
Which I really believe the 93 team was probably the best in Florida history up to that point because it was the first team to win 11 games, first team to win the Sugar Bowl ever, and really only the second team to ever play to play on a January the first game. I actually had played in one in 66. We won the Orange Bowl, and I think Florida had lost a couple of Sugar Bowls. It was the second win. That's what it was in school history. But, those guys, we won some close ones now during the regular season. And when I look back during that four-year stretch where we won the four SECs in a row, we lost to Auburn twice. That's only two conference losses we had. And by 3 points, 38-35, 36-33. But like I tell the guys, I said, maybe it was meant that we were going to lose one game.
Right.
Would you rather go 9-8-0 and lose the championship game or lose that one in the sort of the middle of the year and win the championship game? So certainly we all want that championship, which it turned out to be that way.
Do those Auburn games haunt you at all?
No.
They haunt me.
No, we, you know, could have, should have won. It was amazing. I think I was the signal man also back then. And Danny, he missed, I can only remember him missing two signals all the time, the 4 years he played. And he missed one against Auburn in 93.
Was it the goal line play?
Yeah, down on the goal line.
Yeah.
I sent in 97, and he thought I just sent in 90. He turned away, he said, and I didn't see the other one. Doring ran a little slant. He's wide open. We're getting ready to go up, 17 to nothing? Something like that. And we had sort of a 90 on this side that we'd worked on, and the receiver got bumped. I mean, they could have called interference, but they didn't. and the guy picked it off and ran all the way down about the 10-yard line, and then they were back in the game. I mean, some funny things happened that made us a loser. They hit a 4th and 10. Kevin Carter has got his hand up, and the ball misses it an inch. We didn't play a real smart coverage there, so I'll take blame for that. But if we had to lose one, those are the ones that didn't hurt us.
With this new league coming up, did you ask Bobby if he was interested in coming working with you?
Yeah, I talked to him just briefly. I said, "You got any interest?" And he said, "I'm not been out of it as long as you've been out, so I'm still resting." And he wants to see his sons play. Yeah. They're both going to be walk-ons at Oklahoma. I think both of them will earn a scholarship before they finish there because they're good athletes. So he wants to watch him practice a little bit and stay right there, I think, for a while.
Are you going to basically take the same playbooks that you've had your whole life down to Orlando?
Oh, no, it's changed a little bit. And run-pass option stuff is different, so we'll do some of that. But I tell you what we are going to do, Pat, we're going to have the quarterback under center.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty my last couple of years at South Carolina not doing that. But I'm convinced there's a place for both the gun and underneath the center. And I think there's a place for running straight at people instead of the sideways play that everybody runs now. And then throw off of it. You know, have a good solid run that you can run straight at them and have play action pass that way. So we'll be doing that. And then we'll be doing a lot of stuff that people are doing now also.
Do you think Gator fans are going to gravitate towards that team?
Well, I hope so. I hope the Orlando area people. It's going to be, Orlando is a big metropolis area. I think it's the largest city that does not have a pro football team, somebody said. Mike Bianchi told me that. So I think they're fired up down there. I hope we can come up with a good nickname here pretty soon. We don't have one yet. But we want them to know this is their team. This is the area, Orlando area, Central Florida. And if we put a good product out there, they'll come support us. We need to score points and win games. And I've learned football fans like that combination.
Stay away from predators.
They don't like 9-6 or 9-7. They like 38-35 so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, predators is taken. You can't use that one. That was the old USFL team.
Yeah, at one time I threw out the word hombre, which some people think is a thug guy, but it's not. Hombre is a term of endearment in the Spanish vocabulary, right. Spanish people. And the Spanish sort of settled Florida, way back in the 1600s. And it's like a friend, a buddy, an amigo, a pal, a dude. But I don't know if hombres is going to catch on or not down there.
the president might have ruined that word.
Yeah, the president said they got a bunch of mean, dirty hombres. And you could have said, well, they got a bunch of smart hombres, too. I mean, there's all kind of hombres.
That's right. Yeah. All right, he's Steve Spurrier, and we will be back with more of the Duly Noted Podcast right after this break.
Okay, thanks to Coach Spurrier. Love having him on the show. And, and by the way, if any of you are wondering, Jerry's doing great. He said just about 100% now after she went through a situation, a health issue that got pretty serious there for a while with her appendix and everything. She's doing good, and that's always great to hear. Let's go ahead and do three things. Why not? Three things, I think. Number one, Sunday was Florida's takeover on ESPN or SEC Network, which is fun to watch. I love it. I love when Florida's doing the takeover. The other 13, I can do without. If there's a football game on, I might watch it. But I'm not going to watch an old softball game. I don't care who's playing. I did watch the 7th inning of the Florida Texas A&M game because I happened upon it. And I went, oh, I can watch this now. I wouldn't want to watch, like somebody said, you didn't watch Florida Auburn baseball. I go, the game was boring. The finish was spectacular, but the game itself wasn't that exciting. But the one game that I really wanted to watch, in fact, I taped it because the 07 national title game in basketball, when Florida beat Ohio State, it was like a blur in real life, and I'd really not ever sat and watched the whole game again. It was an exciting time in I think any Gator fan's life, and it certainly was in my life with the championships in 06 and then basketball, 06 football, 07 basketball, and then 08 football, Heisman Trophy in between. I mean, it was an amazing time, and it was like a blur. So I went back and watched that game. I watched it from cover to cover, and it was – boy, it was fun watching that team. But you know what was the thing I had forgotten is how good Chris Richards played in that tournament and how good a player he was for a guy who didn't really get a lot of pub. In that game against Ohio State, he had 8 points, I think 6 rebounds, but he played a lot of defense. Think about this. We you know, last year's Florida team obviously was challenged in the interior, especially offensively. Think about what Billy was throwing out there in 2007. Al Horford, Joakim Noah, Chris Richards, Maurice Spates. Man, you think, I mean, I'm telling you, Mike White would have said, roll those out in a Yahtzee container, and whichever one pops up, turns over, I'll take. But a little nod to Chris Richards. He really, and I tell you who else played pretty good in that game was Walter Hodge. Now, so did Horford. So did, obviously, Lee Humphrey, Torian Green, Corey Brewer, Joakim, the big five. But it was a lot of fun to watch. I enjoyed it, but I want to give a shout-out to him. Number two, I was listening to an NFL show on Sirius Radio, and they were talking about the number of teams who they thought could win it in the NFL. And I started thinking, how many teams can win it in college football? Well, in theory, anybody could win it, right? I mean, you win all your games. Oh, wait, UCF couldn't win it last year, winning all its games. So you got to eliminate pretty much, you almost eliminate every team that's not Power Five. It would take a miracle to get one in, okay? You could get in. Like if UCF went 12-0 again this year, 13-0, they could say, hey, look, we've proven it 2 years in a row. They could sneak in. But the chances are very slim that a one-loss Alabama or a one-loss Oklahoma or a one-loss Clemson or a one-loss Nebraska or anybody is going to get eliminated by a zero-loss team from the group of five. I just don't see it happening. So I started thinking about the teams that I thought could win it this year, and I only came up with 10. And I'll take those 10 and spot you the rest of them, and we can bet. Alabama and Georgia, the only two I see. I think Auburn, to me, hasn't Auburn celebrated losing its last two games a little too much this offseason? I know they beat Alabama. I know it is the game. I know it's the Iron Bowl. I get all that. I get how big a deal. I will argue with anybody in the world who doesn't think Alabama-Auburn's the biggest rivalry in sports. I think it is. But then you lost, and then you lost again. And the feeling of, oh, we're great, we're the greatest, seems to not – I'm not buying it, and I'm not buying Auburn winning the national championship. I got Ohio State, and again, that's a little iffy. I've got Wisconsin, as I mentioned earlier. I like Wisconsin a lot. And I've got Michigan. I think Michigan with Shea Patterson might be good enough to win it all. They've got a lot of good players, still not sold on their coach, and don't eat chicken. I got Oklahoma, I got TCU, and TCU's a little bit of a stretch. I've got Washington, I got Miami and Clemson, and that's it. That's my list. Now, you're going to start screaming, oh, what about this team? What about this team? Those are the teams I think can win it, and I'll take those 10. I'll take those 10. I wouldn't be surprised if all four of those 10 were in the playoffs. Somebody may come out of nowhere and get in. But it'll be interesting. So anyway, those are my 10. Finally, number three, it's been a weird summer for me in that we took a vacation of a lifetime, went to the Grand Canyon, went to Sedona, went to Vegas, where it's new level hot, 117 one day I was out there. But it's been a really sad summer. In fact, the reason I'm doing this Monday instead of Tuesday is that ex-mother-in-law, passed away, still very close to her. She's come over for Christmas dinner with my ex-wife. My ex-wife and my wife get along great. They both sit around and try to go, why did we marry him again? And she passed away last week. Very heartbreaking. Heartbreaking for my oldest daughter, too, who's down to one grandparent. And so the funeral's tomorrow, and I'm going over for that. In addition to that, my brother-in-law, Bobby Meisenheimer, as good a guy as you want to know, UF grad, UF fan, huge fan. In fact, I'm going to try to get something sent to him from one of the coaches. But was in an accident where a guy ran a red light. I don't want to go any further than that because I think he is actually in court today. So, but he is in really bad shape. He's getting better. But it is a long road for him, and his life's not going to be the same when he gets out. We just want him to be alive. And so any prayers you can send up to Chicago and Bobby Meisenheimer would be much appreciated. It's been, like I said, kind of a strange summer. Feels like it's been uplifting and then just totally depressing. That's life, right? That's the life we lead. It's there all the time. All right, this may have gone a little long, but hey, I haven't been on in a long time. It's fun to be back talking to you guys. We'll have another one for you next week. We'll have another guest next week. May have somebody come in and sit down. We'll see. I got to make some phone calls. And appreciate everybody for listening. Appreciate for listening to the commercials. Hey, these people were nice enough to get involved in our show. So support them, right? And we'll be back next week with another edition of the Dooley Noted Podcast. Until then, my name is Pat Dooley. I am the sports columnist at the Gainesville Sun, and I am deep. I am way back, and I am out of here.